Hey, it's Wednesday, March 23rd. My name is Stephen Beecham.
My name is Rafe Needleman.
And I am Brian Tong. Welcome to Buzz Out Loud, the podcast of indeterminate length, brought to you by CNET.com and other sponsors as well. We are on episode 1432. Rafe, stepping in admirably again.
Yeah.
Stepping up to the plate, and I kind of owe you something. I owe you big time.
You owe me, brother.
I owe you big time.
Someday I may ask a favor of you.
And I will deliver. I'm a man of my word. Yeah. Molly's out right now. You know, you just got to take care of the body, a little sick at home and just hanging out. So, Rafe, not sick and not virus-like here.
Well,
in the house.
Not physically sick.
Oh, that is true. Yeah. Don't get sick of me. Now, we're going to start things off. We're going to be going over to CTA in Orlando. Kent German, our main man over there. We have Bonnie Chow out there, Kent German, Jessica Dolcourt, and a variety of CNET TV people. They're going to be reporting from the floor, and Kent's going to kind of talk to us about some of the new things that they have seen out on the show floor, some of the new gadgets, and obviously a lot of action happening at CTA. So we're going to toss to Kent for a moment. We won't be able to talk to him live, but he will give us a report of what's happening right now.
Hey guys, I'm here at CTA 2011 in Orlando. Of course, one of the biggest cell phone shows of the year. This is day two. We told you a lot about what happened at day one. A lot of Android tablets, but I'll tell you more about what happened today. I just met with Sony Ericsson. They showed me again the Sony Ericsson Xperia Play. Of course, we saw that in Barcelona at Mobile World Congress, but pretty exciting because Sony Ericsson, as we know, will be the first carrier to get that, and that's in the whole world. So we're excited about that because, you know, Sony Ericsson comes out with these phones. They usually make it to Europe first. They make it to Asia. They're getting it first, so that's a big deal. Also, we know that the phone is coming to Verizon late April or early May. They wouldn't give me an exact price date, or price, they wouldn't give me a date either, but we know it'll be around that time. Also, we'll be coming to Rogers in Canada. That'll be a GSM version, but it's exciting that we'll see it in North America. We'll have a few Verizon apps, and we'll get some games on it as well, preloaded. We also know that the HTC Flyer, that's another product that we saw at Barcelona. That's the HTC tablet, 7 inches. It had that scribe technology where you can take the pen, you can write in it, and then you can actually sync up your written notes with audio notes. I thought it was really cool. Bonnie Chow even liked it. You know, when Bonnie likes something, it must be pretty interesting. That's coming to Best Buy. That's a Wi-Fi only version. It will become in April, I think, and it should be about $650. We don't know the price right now. It was €499, so that's kind of in the 650 range, maybe 675. That means you get the tablet without a carrier. You don't have to sign up for any data plan, but you get everything you get. There was all the features that were on that flyer in Europe. It has Gingerbread, which you're kind of disappointed about, but we know it'll be getting upgraded to Honeycomb at some point. And I don't know, some people might argue that actually waiting for a really fully baked version of Honeycomb might be even better. We also have the LG Thrill 4G. Now, this is a phone that's new for AT&T. It is very similar to the LG Optimus 3D, so it takes and records 3D video. And that's just coming, I think, later this summer, not really sure, but we're just seeing a prototype version right now. And the 3D video is pretty cool. I think it's kind of nifty. I don't know how much I'd use it, but the things kind of float off the screen. The effect is very subtle. That's an Android phone, of course. Has a lot of features, so we're pretty excited about that, too. But hang on for more news. I'm taking a tour of a Verizon switch today. That's a place where Verizon does all their backhaul. They route traffic through the network, so I'll tell you what that looks like. It's supposed to withstand a Category 5 hurricane. So I don't know whether it's in a concrete bunker or anything, but I'll take some photos. I'll show you what that's like. We'll have more hands-on videos. We'll have more photo galleries, and we'll have our best of CTIA coming later as well. So we'll pick the best products of the show and tell you what they are. So CTIA has been pretty good so far. Of course, a merger's hanging over everybody's head. Not saying more about that. Lisa companies aren't, but we'll see what happens there. So I'm Kent German. I'm here at CTA 2011 in Orlando. Take it back to you.
Kent German.
What a great report.
Wow. The timing on that was impeccable.
You guys out there who are listening to this, there's a 10-second lag between us and Kent, and you wouldn't know it. A little inside baseball there for you guys. Nicely done, crew.
Yeah, very well done across the board. Now, your eyes kind of perked up when he said 3D cameras inside the phones.
No, they weren't perking. They were bleeding. Because, you know, my eyes bleed whenever anybody mentions 3D because I personally, not speaking for anybody else, cannot stand the concept of 3D. And a 3D in a mobile phone? Give me a break.
I know.
That's ridiculous.
It's not going to be like the final decision maker for a lot of people. So, Kent, thank you so much for that wrap up of some of the cool things that are coming out there. And we'll have continuous reports and stories. Obviously, you can go to news.cnet.com to find more about that. But we're going to also kind of piggyback on that and talk about more of some of the fallout that's happened with the whole AT&T T-Mobile merger. Sprint's CEO Dan Hess recently said, and this is as of yesterday, about his concerns. He planned to submit his concerns over AT&T's proposed acquisition of T-Mobile, saying that the deal hurts the wireless industry.
Surprising absolutely nobody.
Now, what's interesting about this, though, that I found is that during the panel, mm-hmm. when Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint were all up together with at the beginning of CTIA, one thing that you didn't hear is Verizon didn't say it. You know, they were not opposed to it. And when you think about that, like, they didn't outright say, you know what, we don't know if this is good or this is bad, or they haven't taken necessarily a strong position. But what I'm saying is that it's almost in their interest not to refute or object to this merger, because Verizon's a big boy. In the future, if they want to, you know, if they have an opportunity to continue to grow and have another big, not monopoly, but large carrier like this, why would they, quote unquote, bitch and moan so much about AT&T acquiring T-Mobile when they want to do that in the future?
Yeah, they're going to buy Sprint.
Yeah.
And they cannot complain. Verizon is backed into a corner here. Yeah. And then things will go from bad, where they are right now, to even worse when we've only got two major carriers. And I don't care about Twinkletel and all that other tiny ones. No, obviously Sprint is going to try to block this in any way they can, because it takes them from third to last in the major carrier race. And their points are very valid. The question is it the job of government regulators and agencies to say this is good for business or good for competition or bad or for consumers or whatever? And that's where this gets really quite confusing. I mean, you do want to encourage competition and innovation. On the other hand, we've been through this before, and we broke up the phone companies for a good reason. And now here they are. They're like the Terminator. You know, you break them into
the T-1000 specifically.
Exactly right. Nicely done.
I know you got some game.
So yeah, the telcos are totally T-1000. You break them into a million pieces, and then they come back together again. You can't stop them. They just and then you got to break them apart again with a shotgun.
And don't touch it, because it might end up looking like you.
Yes, that's the other thing.
Now, also, the merger would then give AT&T and Verizon, they would hold about 79% of the U.S. market if regulators do approve this. Sprint shares, on the news of everything, fell 14%, because obviously they're, like you said, they are last in the major carrier race. So, you know, this thing is still planning to, it has to be approved. It's going to be about a year till anything happens. So,
yeah, if you want Verizon stock at a discount right now, buy Sprint. Mark my words.
Good insider investing tips from Rafe.
No inside baseball there. No inside information there. Just a wild-ass prediction.
Now, in other mobile device news, Samsung recently went out kind of out of their comfort zone of what they normally do and scoffed at the tablet surplus speculation. So recently there were reports that Samsung's inventory and stock was sky high, somewhere in the hundreds of thousands, because the Galaxy Tab has not sold so well. And kind of out of character, and this is kind of almost indicative now that there's so many rumors and, you know, speculation flying around that is treated like news and affects company stocks, Samsung outright came out to deny the fact that their lousy sales have led to the oversupply.
Did they deny they had lousy sales to begin with? Or do they deny they have an oversupply? Which is it?
They denied.
When did you stop, you know, beating your wife is what it comes down to. The Galaxy Tab, it's not a bad little product.
It's not.
But and people are going to get on my case about this, but I have seen exactly zero of them out there in the wild.
I've seen one.
Have you really? Where?
I have seen. It was at the airport.
Hmm.
The litmus test is always how many of these devices do you actually see in the wild.
Right. And people will say, well, you don't see them in San Francisco because, you know, but it's like, we're the early adopters. If we're not seeing any here, then I guarantee you, it's not doing that well.
Yeah. The good thing for Samsung
What Samsung says.
Yeah. The good thing for Samsung is at CTIA, they announced their new tablets that are 2.2 millimeters thinner than the iPad 2.
0.2 whatever's thinner than the, they're still, you know.
thin is in. I'm not saying, you know.
No, thin is good. We like that. Thin products are nice products, but there's more to it. It's
of
like when you try to fight with Apple on specs, forget it, you lose.
It's already happening to a certain degree, at least with the Zoom. Now, also, big news yesterday, I don't think we really touched upon it too much, but Mozilla launched Firefox 4.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was happy, everyone was excited, but Firefox is even more excited because, you know, last week Microsoft announced that they released IE9 and they posted up the numbers of 2.35 million downloads in the first 24 hours. What would you take a guess for Firefox? You already know the number.
I don't.
Do you want to take a random guess of how many they were downloaded in the first 24 hours without reading the article? Take a guess. Let's
great Ray Foney says 6 million.
That's pretty good. It was actually 6 million, and it's fastly approaching 7 million. Rafe?
Thank you very much.
Are you the Magic 8 Ball?
I've only been doing this since 1988.
The new Magic 8 Ball for Buzz Out Loud, Rafe. So, Firefox soaring, and one of the reasons why, you know, IE9 might have been limited and we talked about is the fact that it did not support XP, which is still on plenty of systems.
Microsoft basically gave the competition this gigantic gift by creating IE9 for Win 7, while it doesn't work on XP. Meanwhile, Chrome and Firefox work just fine
on
XP, and you've got to wonder what the heck they are smoking at Microsoft to think. I mean, obviously they want to get people off of XP, but giving your installed base to your competitors is not the best way to do it.
Especially when it comes to browsers. I mean, once you get everyone here, once you kind of sometimes use a browser and you just don't care anymore, you don't care to switch.
Yeah, although I tell you something, the browsers are becoming so similar in many ways. I mean, they're close to parity on speed for most people. Mm-hmm. The architectures are becoming the same. How you use them is becoming the same. They've got similar features. That switching is actually quite easy. I downloaded Firefox 4 yesterday for my Mac, and normally I use Chrome. And I was using it for a while, and I forgot. It was like, wait a minute, why does this one keystroke that I'm used to in Chrome not work, or this customization I have set up not work? So I was, I'm in Firefox. And I've been using it for an hour. It's like, I didn't even know. I just forgot.
Yeah, it happens. There's a lot more parity between them now. Also, in an update, because with Firefox does something, then Chrome has to do something right back. Chrome threw out their Chrome 11 beta with the ability to use speech input.
Now, that is interesting.
This is fascinating.
So this is Chrome right now is at version 10. Mm-hmm. And if you go into, I don't know, I forget the how you do it, but you can get onto the beta.
Yeah,
there's
a developer site that you can access the different versions of the beta.
Yeah, you just set a little toggle and then you'll get the beta versions, which are generally pretty stable. Or you can even get the dev versions, which are even more advanced. But trust me on this, will mess up your computer really bad. I did that. But Chrome 11 will have speech recognition, which is part of the standard now. They're trying to get this into HTML5, I guess.
What's amazing about it, though, is like you already talk about how Google's voice integration with their Android operating system, how tight and clean and accurate it is.
Yeah.
You throw it in a browser, and then also it just opens up a whole bunch of new accessibility options in a web browser. Because I'd be the first to say, I mean, I don't have any kind of, you know, immediate viewing disability per se, but I'm sure browsing the web or searching for information and whatnot is not the most accessible thing.
Yeah,
you know, so being a voice commands and voice searching, that's killer.
It's when people start to write the voice feedback loop in, so they start design pages with, you know, voice response. It gets interesting. Mm-hmm. Also in Chrome 11 is direct hardware integration into the graphics cards, so you can get much better performance on your web apps.
Excellent. Now, also, you know, we're talking a bunch about the browsers because there's a lot of browser battle wars going on, and Microsoft used a kind of a clever way to promote IE9 within Firefox Twitters, within Twitter feeds, or by promoting and paying for whenever someone, you know, any search result featuring Firefox.
Any search result for Firefox.
Any search.
Yeah.
Not like just the hashtag. Any search result for Firefox would show an ad for IE9 at the top.
Of Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Twitter search. Very, very smart.
Gaming the system.
Well, that's what you got to do.
It didn't help them increase their numbers that much.
Maybe it helped a little bit, but not enough.
Yeah.
Put them over the edge.
Are people really searching for Firefox as a term on Twitter?
Well, Twitter search is one of the most, you know, useful search engines there is, because if you want to see what's happening now as opposed to last time Google decided to crawl something, Twitter search is great. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Google does have Twitter search results in page, but if what you really want to know is what roads are closed in the middle of this winter storm, Twitter's where you go, not Google.
That's true. All right, we're going to go right now and take a little break. We'll be back, but when we return, fair use for newspapers takes a step back. Really. Also, Netflix, you guys might have had the outage. We'll talk about that and much, much more.
We began with a sports car. And ended with one. Introducing the TSX Sportwagon from Acura.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Buzz Out Loud. Rafe was intrigued by the melodic tones of that ad.
No, we began with four perfectly good tires and ended up with four flat spot smoking wrecks.
It was nice. It was nice. All right. Back to the news. Copyright troll Righthaven has achieved a fair use loss. Now, we've talked about this in the past, but just to kind of refresh your memory of who Righthaven is. Basically, they're a partnership between the Las Vegas Review-Journal and a Vegas attorney. And what they do or have done is essentially they have filed lawsuits against a variety of nonprofits and bloggers that have repurposed their articles, sometimes publishing excerpts on the internet or sometimes publishing the entire article on the internet. And what they've done is they've gone after them, tried to get some sort of, you know, meager settlement, or if not, they would sue them for like $150,000. Like, this is their business model.
There's a key point there that you got, Brian, you got everything right except for one point. Which is what these guys do is they don't go and try to get a meager settlement. They do everything that you said, and then they sue the company claiming copyright infringement without giving them a chance to settle. They go straight to the courts, demand.
They don't warn them, right? They don't. They send them a letter or whatnot.
Demand an extreme settlement via the courts. It is the living definition of being a troll of any sort, patent, copyright, whatever. This is what you do. You wait for somebody to do something you think you might have an action against, and then you attack them with the power with the blinding light of a million suns. And what's beautiful about this particular story is the incredible backfire from the court itself on what happened to Righthaven here. So what happened is they did this suit against some...
It was a Oregon... Center for Intercultural Organizing in Oregon.
The center reprinted a story or an excerpt. I think it was, in this case, was a whole story.
Yeah, it was the entire story.
Entire story, and they got, you know, slammed by Righthaven. And in federal court, the judge said, sorry, this is fair use, you lose. Mm-hmm. Which actually is an interesting case, because this was... looked on the surface like in a pretty egregious violation because they took a whole document.
They pasted the entire article.
Yeah. And the judge says, this is fair use. There is no cause here. Setting Righthaven's entire operation, well, basically knocking it back to the medieval ages.
Yeah. One of the arguments that the judge used is that so long as that the article did not unfairly hinder the market for the original story. So a lot of these nonprofits that are in completely different regions that don't have any bearing or they're not taking readership. In fact, they're probably extending the reach of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Because there is no overlap, that was one of the reasons why the judge says this is okay. And Righthaven has been going off not only just small nonprofits, but we're talking about a blogger. One of the instances was like a cat blogger who had 20 people who viewed the blog.
One of the things that Righthaven does here sometimes, according to the story, is that, say... you're the subject of, if somebody writes a story about you or your business, and you think, wow, what a great little story they've written about me. So you take a couple of sentences from that story and you put it on your own blog. So you're the subject of the story, linking, you know, with an expert linking back to some news story, and then you get sued by Righthaven on their behalf. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. This whole story, and I love seeing the court saying, you know what, you have no cause here. This is ridiculous. In fact, this ruling sets their whole operation back because it's precedent that they will have a hard time overcoming. Mm-hmm. This story, what goes through my mind is the video of that little scrawny kid bullying the big guy and then getting slammed onto the ground. That's what happened here. Little scrawny Righthaven was bullying
the whole system.
The whole little system said, I've had enough of this. Slammo.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Good job, courts.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the thing about this is will people use this case in the future to argue for fair use? You know, a lot of times online publications, this we could see this being used in the future if some, you know, someone complained about using, you know, like, let's say something from the New York Times, something from the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
In a personal blog, well, you know? They're not going after people.
The ruling, from what I, the quick read I gave on this, the ruling was specific enough to not obviate fair use and not cause all sorts of trouble saying that this will be appealed and say this is a bad ruling. This ruling said, you know, if there's no overlap of distribution and stuff like that, this is not a bad thing. This isn't saying that anybody can copy anything and put it up on their blog and steal. Mm-hmm. That's not what this ruling is about. I think it was pretty good. I hope it stands.
Yeah. So interesting news on how that shook out. Now, also in the tech world, a lot of people were talking about Netflix. I mean, geez, Netflix is dominating what we do at night. Netflix suffered a two-hour
shortage.
Dominating
what you do at night.
Whoa! Hello. No, I'm not on Netflix. Not at those hours. Netflix suffered an outage for at least 2 hours that left millions of subscribers without access to their queues. It is back up and running, but things like the iPad app, anything that accessed Netflix, was taken down. I think Netflix makes up something around like 20% of traffic.
Yeah, in the evening hours. This, I think this outage was sponsored by Amazon's book business. Go read a book, people. Jeez.
So people were afraid. Also, in kind of related outages, but not much to dwell on, WordPress was also out. So many of the tech blogs were kind of like, we're down, WordPress.
Go read a book, people.
That affected me from publishing the show for a couple hours yesterday.
It did?
So I apologize.
Yeah, we don't use WordPress.
Yeah, we do to build the code. We do, yeah.
We do?
Yeah.
Oh, good for us. I'm glad we're using WordPress. I love WordPress. I guess my blog was down, but I didn't even notice. It's my own blog.
Also, in Netflix streaming news, Showtime has decided that they will not make some of their current episodes or current seasons of their content available on Netflix. Now, there are shows like Dexter and Californication, the first and second season of Dexter. They are available on Netflix, but you know, they're in the subscription business model.
This is interesting. This is a direct reaction to Netflix going into the content business by signing up Fincher for their show. It's kind of weird because it says that companies that are doing content and distribution are kind of mixed up. I mean, if you do shows and you can do a deal with Netflix to get your show distributed to people who are using Netflix, and that's great as long as you make some money.
Netflix is still streaming during those hours.
Exactly. But to say that, you know, our shows, we're going to produce the shows and we're going to distribute the shows and we're going to try to have a whole vertically integrated network, and therefore another emerging vertically integrated network like Netflix can't have those shows. It means that if you want to get all the content you want to get, now you're going to need on your iPad or your TV, you're going to need the Showtime app, the Netflix app, the whatever, and the whole thing. We might see the beginning of massive fracturing of television viewing apps. What this does to Hulu, I don't know. It's interesting.
I mean, the viewing online on TV, where you can get it, which service you pay for, it's already fractured. You know,
yeah.
And the thing about this is, okay, I get it. Showtime is also a CBS run operation as well, which, and CBS hasn't been the most friendliest for streaming content. But at the same time, if they're taking some of this content down, I don't see how that helps them per se, because a lot of times Netflix is used now for discovery for people who didn't get to watch a show years ago, right?
Yep.
They watch it, they get locked into it, and then they end up potentially paying for the models or the shows on HBO. Like, that doesn't help them.
Yeah, I've talked to some of the people here at CBS about why they do things this way, and without giving up too much, I will say that the decisions that are made here about what shows to put where, whether on Netflix or Hulu or whatever, are not made lightly. It's all part of a calculation designed to get people to watch shows and to increase the revenue from those shows, and it's all experimental at this point. This whole thing is years from being shaken out. All so the decisions, yeah.
They have their own little, you know, they have their own little matrix and chart, you know, to optimize every cent they can. Like, okay, we're going to make it this year.
It is with an eye towards the long term, towards keeping the audience happy and growing and making money. It's not just money now, end of story. It's all a very complicated calculation.
Yeah. In other, maybe not so money now, but a long tail run that New York Times is still trying to do with their paywall and have, you know, people pay for their content. New York Times is asking Twitter to shut down paywall dodgers. So there have been a few Twitter feeds that have been posting links to the New York Times own content that allows them to essentially skirt around the paywall, and the New York Times is asking Twitter to shut them down.
Now, the New York Times is in a very interesting spot here. Obviously, they want to make money from their content, and they need to make it electronically because the print business itself is dying. And forgetting for the moment how much they're charging for this, they have to strike the balance between trying to get money for their subscribers, and yet they need their stories to circulate. So if I put a link up to a New York Times story, people need to be able to read it, so people read the stories, and the New York Times makes money from that readership. So they have what is looks like is designed intentionally to be a very leaky, crumbly paywall. And some people are taking advantage of it, and some people are saying, oh, you can get around the paywall with these four lines of JavaScript code. And that's just gaming the system. And frankly, I find that a little bit disturbing that people think it's okay to try to, you know, basically get all this content for free because you can.
Yeah, I mean, that mentality is pervasive in just internet culture these days, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there is a point where, like, I mean, I'm more of a grown-up now. Like, I pay for the things that I like, you know, whether, you know, the Amazon MP3 tracks, like, I've decided to go against iTunes. But that whole mentality that is still there, and which is amongst my friends, oh, they still think everything on the internet is free. But there's got to be a point where you pay for stuff.
Yeah, you need a better class of friend.
I hang out with some seedy people sometimes.
I guess so, yeah. So. All those New York Times economist reading, you know, scofflaws.
Yeah, not my kind. Also, we have this little infographic just showing, you know, why people might, you know, although everything isn't for free, why people might be trying to skirt around
now,
the system.
To my point here,
yes.
This is ridiculous. I mean, the red bar there is if you want to get the New York Times content on all your devices, it's going to cost you $455
a year.
Why is this? Because if you want the New York Times electronically, you can get the tablet version, which is some amount of money. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to also get it on your iPhone, that's an additional amount of money. You can't just subscribe to the New York Times electronic version and get it everywhere. You
exactly.
have to subscribe to the different delivery models. The Journal did the same thing a while ago, and I think they might still be doing it, although they charge less. What the Times is charging, I mean, paying for content is one thing, but making people pay for the same content multiple times just because they happen to have one device that has a 10-inch screen and one device that has a 4-inch screen is just nuts and makes my blood boil.
It makes your blood boil as high as that little red bar. Now, let's look at this. Let's take a look at that infographic really quickly again, just to give you a little breakdown of some of these services. The Economist yearly comes in at $110. The Wall Street Journal for a year service that is, again, using on multiple devices, $207. The New York Times, $455.
That's absurd.
That is, I mean, that's not even in the ballpark of anyone else.
I know. I get the Times on paper. I get the Sunday Times paper delivery. Primarily so I can get the online version, the iPad version, which comes with it. Mm-hmm. If I also want to read it, and I'm fine with that, I would like to kill the print subscription and just go iPad only. But every now and then I want to read a story on my iPhone. And to think I have to subscribe extra for that just makes me mad.
It's absurd. It's absurd.
Rafe, angry.
Angry Rafe. And just kind of transitioning over to some news in the executives world of people stepping down. Max Software Vice President, Senior VP, Bertrand Serlet, you might have seen him when he did a presentation of Lion. He will be leaving the company. He's been actually tied to Steve Jobs and even the company Next, which is kind of one of the roots of where OS X started, for about 22 years now. So I don't know if he's tired, but also there's another indication what we've been talking about is, why might he be leaving? Well, have you seen what OS X looks like lately?
Yeah, it's looking at iOS.
It looks a lot like iOS.
That's, you know, he's made his money. He's done good for Apple. But it's interesting that he's leaving in the middle of Lion development. That's a major update, Lion.
Oh, yeah. And it's supposed to be coming or dropping sometime this summer.
Yeah.
But he's stepping out there. Also,
this is not good for OS X, my belief. I don't think it's good for OS X.
They have, I don't want to butcher his name. I can't remember his name, but he did the demo of Mac OS X Lion recently at the most at the most recent demo. But you know, Sertran's been there forever. So,
yeah.
Well, OS X's impressive.
As the story says, at least he's not saying the story doesn't say he's leaving to spend more time with his family. The best dodge of all time. It's like he wants to do some new cool stuff.
Yeah,
and he can. So more power to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, in kind of a little interesting timing, Groupon's president and COO, Rob Solomon, has stepped down. And this kind of, the reason why the timing of this might be so odd is that we know that Groupon has been kind of in the middle of IPOing potentially with ridiculous like valuations.
Mm-hmm. Billions and billions.
Tens of billions to 20 billions.
Nobody leaves a company at this stage of pre-IPO-ishness with the amount of money involved unless there's something else going on. Now, it's possible that Solomon here has his shares fully vested and locked up, so no matter what happens, he makes money. But this is not good for the stock. Mm-hmm. People said this might be fallout from the whole Nepal or the Tibet ads thing, but I doubt it. I don't think that could
submarine a COO. I mean, no one's complaining enough where the company has gone to the dumps, and he would just step out for that. So
yeah,
okay. Do you want to talk about this BlackBerry Map story?
Oh sure.
Sure.
Some senators, U.S. Senators Frank Lautenberg from New Jersey and Harry Reid from New Jersey and Schumer from New York, etc., have got RIM, the guys who make the BlackBerry, to remove from their online store an app that helps drunk drivers, they say, evade police. What this is an app that shows you where the police have DUI checkpoints set up so you can route around them if you're too drunk to pass a checkpoint but sober enough to read a BlackBerry and drive around it. Now, this is an interesting debate here, I think, because DUI checkpoints are often set up by police departments and widely publicized, not just to catch drunk drivers, which they do, but also to send a message to everybody in a city, you may not drive drunk tonight. It's a public service. We are making the road safe. So just stay home. And that's what people do. It's like, DUIs, checkpoints everywhere. I'm not even going to bother because I'm going to be too drunk to drive around them. So I'm just going to have somebody else drive me. So by taking this app offline, the question is it actually doing the right thing or is it just diminishing the ability of a police force to have its
a deterrent?
Deterrent effect.
Ooh.
I don't know.
Yeah. The senators also asked across the board, they're saying that BlackBerry will remove them, but they also asked iOS and Android apps to take themselves down, at their request.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who knows if they're actually going to respond to that, but, having the checkpoint thing in place, I think it's an important thing.
Yeah. Reed's from Nevada, by the way. I misspoke.
Okay. Got it. All right. We're going to pick things up a little bit with a little quick hit. All right. Apple has been, trying to defend and protect their trademark for the App Store. They're also doing this for specific apps on Android. So there's an adult service app called Me Candy. It's funny because I actually know about this app because I had to cover it a long time ago. But they've been hit with a cease and desist letter from Apple over its term, the App Store. It was pitching itself as the world's first app store for adults.
Okay.
So since then, they've now changed
Apple
it.
Doesn't like App Store, anybody else's App Store, and they definitely don't like porn.
Yeah, so they're so double whammy screwed from the start. It's just interesting.
Well, that's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah, but they're, it is.
Sorry.
But so they've now changed themselves to the Me Candy app market.
Uh-huh.
Win for Apple. Also, Windows Phone 7, stepping in the future, their latest update adds copy and paste functionality.
Yeah, it's just taking a play right out of Apple's book, where, you launch a product without copy and paste, and then you add it in later.
Yeah, it's also, this is their Nodo update. So they've also added some performance tune-ups, especially as well as Wi-Fi functionality. And
wait, they added Wi-Fi too?
Performance updates for Wi-Fi. Performance updates and performance updates for Wi-Fi functionality.
Can we check the dateline on the story? Is this not a 2008 story here?
Stop. All right. Stop. I actually like Windows Phone 7, the OS itself.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. So it'll be sent on a rolling schedule. We do remember that kind of a recent pushed out update for Windows Phone 7's affected a bunch of Samsung phones. Yeah. And I can't remember if they were necessarily bricked, but they were essentially non-functioning for a while. But hopefully this update goes a lot smoother.
Okay.
What, good. What?
Nothing. I was going to make a snarky comment
continue.
About Windows 7.
Snark is welcome.
I don't want the 8 Windows 7 fanboys to come down on my head.
Wow, is the chat room in an uprising yet?
Not yet. There's not enough of them.
Yeah. Also in news that probably doesn't surprise you too much, a study shows that AT&T iPhone owners rely on Wi-Fi more than Verizon iPhone users.
Well, yes, because you have to if you have an AT&T iPhone.
An average of 53% of iPhone AT&T iPhone users use Wi-Fi on average of 53% versus Verizon iPhone users, which use it 38%. 2 in 3 AT&T iPhone owners who switched to Verizon iPhone paid the termination fee. This is just kind of some interesting number. Wow. They really wanted to make that move.
That's a lot of detail here. It's interesting. I mean, obviously, if you're on an iPhone and you want to do data, you're going to be using Wi-Fi more than you are on Verizon because the cellular network is in some cities, you know, the data network is just not that strong. Mm-hmm. But also, I think that Verizon users may not be as heavy data users because you can't talk and do data at the same time. Now, for the Verizon, you can if you're doing talk on GSM. Mm-hmm. Obviously not. Talk on CDMA and data on Wi-Fi. But you're not used to it because the phone basically isn't built that way when you're not on Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. So maybe you just don't do it as much.
Yeah, and also just an FYI, just because a lot of these surveys we see thrown out here, the sample size was 600 people. Mm-hmm. 600 Verizon users, just because we've had some pretty embarrassing... this survey, 56 people. Thanks, Gene Munster.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, in our last quick hit, Google obtains the patent for their Google.com doodles. So, obviously, this cool stuff where whenever you go to Google, sometimes on holidays or different events or special days, they change the look of it. The patent it granted, described as a system, provides for a periodically changing storyline and or special event company logo to entice users to access a website.
I haven't read this patent. But you got to wonder if this is targeted right at Bing.com's front page, because every day they have a different graphic in the Bing background.
Is it just a different background, like a landscape type thing?
Yeah, but they're functional. I mean, there's mouse over stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is weird. I mean, it's like every day we change the graphic on the front page of our newspaper to entice readers to come in, and that covered? I don't know. Most patent stuff, once you get into it, actually is very specific.
I don't know how far reaching that necessarily is, but we'll see if they start complaining to other websites for changing their logo every day.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's go over to the science news.
Prepare for science news.
All right, NeuroFocus, company making its first wireless EEG sensor headset. And check it out. It's basically monitoring the brain activity 2,000 times per second. And there's a Bluetooth radio involved that shoots your thoughts to the smartphone, tablet, or PC of your choice. So when you're looking at different things, maybe explosions, maybe that Google logo on their website, this could be used to track that activity and help marketers be more effective. Or you could just wear it as headgear at your home.
It's quite stylish. Yeah, especially with those stupid neon lights running through the middle of it. What this obviously does not read your thoughts per se.
It better not be able to.
Yet. But I think it reads, from what I know about electroencephalography, I believe what this will do is read recognition of events, emotional state very grossly, like excitement from an explosion, or the startle reaction is measurable. I actually worked in an epilepsy clinic once. I did something similar to this. But what they want to use this for is measuring advertising effectiveness.
Exactly.
Or show effectiveness. So you're sitting there watching your TV and you got the thinking hat on, and they just want to know if you're responding to the ads. That's what it all comes down to. This is Nielsen version 4.0.
It could be used to better the world, or it could be used to help advertisers, which whatever way you want to look at
it. That's right. It's interesting technology, though. I mean, it is only a matter of time. Over time, we're going to learn more and more about the brain. Mm-hmm. The technology to read the electrical signals in the brain will get more and more precise, and it's kind of freaky. The cool thing is, who do they choose to be the representatives of humanity who are wearing this thing?
That's actually a very important question.
Yes, it is.
I hope it's a diverse sample size.
Only geniuses.
Only geniuses.
That's right.
It wouldn't apply to me then.
Oh, of course it would.
Oh, that
they'd be lining up outside your door. Please, Brian, wear our thinking hat.
Please, please. You don't want to know what's in this mind. All right, on to the happy endings. I don't even know who put this one in the rundown, but I like it either way. All right, check out this website. This is almost computer love worthy, if not already. But this is the textboyfriend.com website. Now, what this allows you to do, I wonder if these people are making money, is essentially you can subscribe to a plan. Oh, I love the sounds. A weekly plan, a monthly plan or a yearly plan, and text boyfriend will text you 3 times a week. Just the perfect amount of sweetness. No over-texting, no drama. He's fun, cute, and he's all about you.
Wait, so the idea is that a gal gets this thing to nag her boyfriend just the perfect amount, according to the site?
No. This acts like the boyfriend to say hi to the girl.
Oh, so the guy buys this.
Yeah, look at some of the, you know, yeah, the guy could buy this, but I feel like...
Or is it a fake boyfriend of the girl?
Yeah. Girls need a lot of attention, let's be honest.
No comment. I'm not getting into that one.
But,
And they need a lot of attention from their $1.95 a week bots.
If you could mask it that it really was from you,
yeah,
then it would be way better.
Think of how this could go wrong.
Well, look at the classic line like this that melts hearts. My love for you is like the universe, never ending. I wasn't saying that directly to you, so don't look at me like you're...
I'm getting all dreamy.
You're peering into my eyes, and I'm feeling uncomfortable.
Doesn't take much.
All right, on to our next size news story. Check this out. For fans of Top Chef or fans of sci-fi, Marcel Vigneron, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but I've watched the show plenty of times, and it's fun. He will be premiering his show, Marcel's Quantum Kitchen.
I really want to see
that. It actually debuted last night.
I missed it. Dang it.
Oh, my gosh.
I wonder if it's on Netflix. Probably not.
No, I don't think so. But it debuted last night. I don't know if anyone here in the chat room saw it, but he does some of these crazy things where he kind of, you know, mixes a little bit of science with food. And in this video that's kind of promoting it, he's showing how he basically takes mozzarella and softens it up and mixes it up so that you could use it to basically make a mozzarella balloon. That's awesome.
Cooking is just chemistry experiments.
Yeah.
And so all these extreme chefs are doing all these weird things with strange chemicals and temperatures and stuff like that and doing really cool stuff. Did you guys talk about Nathan Myhrvold's cookbook?
No.
So Nathan Myhrvold, Microsoft co-founder, he's a former CTO, launched – he spent – you know, he cashed out with gabillions of dollars. And one of the things he did was he went on this this lifelong quest to create this incredible cookbook, and it's all weird stuff like this. You know, like, I don't know.
Like foamy.
Look at that. That's like a balloon of cheese.
That's crazy.
Or drinks that are gaseous. I don't know. Weird stuff. Anyway, yeah. So he finally put out this cookbook. It's $625 and it's 2,400 pages. And it's all like his weird scientific cooking techniques.
Did he also do like a whole winery in Napa? You know how a lot of those people did that stuff?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm just saying he might have.
Anyway.
Cool so, yeah, stuff. I don't know. I hope my TiVo got that just based on what I watch.
Do you watch a lot of cooking shows?
Oh, I mean, I watch Top Chef. That show's fun.
Yeah.
Ace of Cakes.
That's
where they build the cakes. Oh, that one's pretty sweet. Okay, we're going to go to the feedback loop. No voicemails, but we will jump into the feedback. All right, we'll just rotate. We'll just go back and forth with emails. Is that all right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, first email. This is in response to the Apple App Store trademark. Longtime listener AJ from Illinois writes in, I think they should call it Amazon's application storefront. Their store name will not conflict with any another application store, and users will still call it the Amazon App Store. Problem solved.
Okay.
No matter what they call it.
They're
going to call it App Store. People are.
I've been calling applications apps for longer than Apple's been around. All right, anyway. Jim in Vegas says, hey, BuzzCrew, regarding the AT&T buyout of T-Mobile, I couldn't be happier. Why? Well, as a teenager who has no control over what carrier he is on, which is AT&T right now, I have always been jealous of my friends who are on T-Mobile because of the awesome phone selection. First was the Sidekick, then the G1, then the MyTouch, and now it is just the whole mess of hot Android phones. So assuming AT&T gets some of these phones, this could not be better.
Assuming
AT&T versus plus T-Mobile doesn't just constrict your choice like a collapsing star, yes, it could be better.
T-Mobile was the place where a lot of those cool phones came from. I mean, that's why we were like annoyed about the whole thing or just bitching about it, is because will AT&T bring on some of those innovative phones that every other carrier didn't really want to look at?
No.
The answer is probably not.
No.
So, and there's so many. That's the thing, right? There's so many phones coming out.
Yeah.
A carrier can't have them all.
That's why you need multiple carriers.
I know that. That's what I'm saying.
That's why I keep telling you.
I thanks. Okay. Here's our next email. This one comes from Chloe on Monday show. BT asks for show of hands from those using the cellular juggernaut that is U.S. Cellular. Well, consider my handheld aloft. I'm a technology manager for a window manufacturing company in Iowa, and we have around 30 phones, mostly BlackBerries with a few Androids on US Cellular. They use CDMA and piggyback off Verizon's network when out of its own network. The only real downside is that it's always several months after Verizon gets a cool new phone before it becomes available on US Cellular, although I'm sure the iPhone will never bridge the gap. Well, there you go. We had several other readers that did write in that say they're on US Cellular too, so.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
All right. Marco. Hello, hosts and person working the board today. That would be you.
That'd be Steven.
Hi, Steven. In BOL 1430, you read the email about the Canadian who ran afoul of U.S. border agents with an iPod containing pirated music. Just last Friday, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Okay.
It exists.
I guess it does. It issued an advisory to artists and readers of graphic novels and manga. Is that how you pronounce it?
Manga. You did good.
Thank you. Whew. About problems crossing borders. More and more people are being stopped, searched, and even detained because of comic art they have with them. In this case, someone going to an anime convention was handcuffed and held briefly on charges of child pornography and his material seized. What's the tech angle? More than ever, manga and comics are being made available in digital form for reading on phones, tablets, and computers. Also, the internet has made the world smaller, and more stories and art forms from other countries with different cultures and standards are becoming available. Anyone who travels outside the U.S. might want to look the brief over as it discusses your rights and has suggestions for making sure your property, be it physical or digital, stays available when you reach your destination. And there's the link here, which we'll put in the notes. Very, very good point. Raises, but it's a different point. And piracy is one thing. And it's scary enough that materials that you may have not paid for or somehow achieved illegally or not be licensed properly could be sniffed out when you're doing border crossings. If a comic, a hand-drawn image, is seen as child pornography, that is just weird. I mean, pornography is one thing. Child pornography is a whole other level of awfulness when you are charged with that. And for drawings, not photographs, but drawings out of somebody's imagination. Now, they may be evil imaginations, and it may be bad thoughts, and it may be disruptive and all that stuff. But it is not the same thing. It is not the same physical exploitation of a human being when it's a drawing and not a photograph. This is a very scary precedent. I'm going to read that advisory, and I encourage other people to as well, because that's very interesting and scary stuff.
Shaking things up. Also, all right, guys. Well, you know what? We just wanted to give you an update at the end of our show of how well did that our Buzz Out Loud iPad 2 auction go for. Yesterday, it ended, and it brought in $3,050.
Oh, that's
proceeds less than going to Japan.
That's less than you can get an iPad 2 for another.
Hey, that's less than you can get on eBay right
price.
Now.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's really cool,
that
though.
No,
it actually isn't. That's a lot of money for an iPad, and that is really great. That money's going to a good cause.
Yeah,
good
job, Molly. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone who was a part of that, or thanks for promoting it or talking about it. So Buzz Out Loud making its contribution to Japan. So that's amazing stuff. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Awesome, guys. Rafe, thank you so much for coming out again.
Hey, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying right here because in half an hour, CNET to the Rescue is on. We're going to be answering your tech questions. Eric Franklin from the labs is going to be here helping out. It's going to be a really interesting show. We've got some really creative questions.
Also, a Reporters Roundtable.
On Friday,
for that?
Yeah. On Friday, the Reporters Roundtable, we're going to be talking about automobile traffic and how mobile apps will get you to your destination faster and what the state of the art is in auto navigation, routing, traffic avoidance, and maybe even parking. Who knows?
So what they're doing more beyond than just GPS, right?
Yeah, not just here to there, but here to there in a way that gets you around the DUI roadblocks or whatever.
Awesome. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Well, that'll do it for us today. If you guys want to check out our show notes, you can go to bol.cnet.com. You can also call, leave us your voicemails, tell us what's on your mind, what you liked, what you don't like, what you want to hear about more. 800-616-2638. That's 800-616-CNET. And also you can email us at buzz@cnet.com. We're getting tons of good emails from you guys. So thank you for that. And we will see you here tomorrow. Molly should be back. I should be back. And Rafe will be gone.
I will be recovering from doing two back-to-back shows.
No, it was Monday, Wednesday.
No, I'm doing BOL Rescue.
Yeah,
yeah.
You need a massage. All right, guys.
That's the favor you owe me.
Oh, dude.
Bye, everyone. I'll leave you with that image.
Goodbye. I don't want that.